Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of Making Sense of It All. I'm your host, Jesse Stakes. This week, we're going to move away from sports and get back into the financial world. We're going to talk about the rise of payment technology. I know that phrase is pretty much a catch-all, but essentially, as digital payments have become more widely accepted by businesses and used by consumers, what does it all mean? And what does it look like? Well, my guest this week is Derek Smith. He has over 15 years of experience in the payment technology industry, and he's now an accountant by trade. He has a unique vantage point of being able to see the industry from a provider's perspective, an end user's perspective, and now in an advisory role. Enjoy the conversation. Let's jump right into it.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jesse. I'm really excited to chat with you about payments, and it's gonna be great.
Absolutely. So for my audience, one of the biggest reasons why I wanted to have Derek on is Derek is one of the people that has one of the most well-rounded 360-degree views of so many of the moving parts that really comprise the payment technology industry. So, you know, I'd love to talk about your career before we get started kind of talking about this. I mean, it's like trying to eat an elephant, but, tell the audience a little bit about your career and kind of how you got started in the financial services industry in the first place.
It's really weird because I never aimed to get started in banking and, 25 years old and just looking for a job and ended up getting a job at a bank. And that kind of grew into, going into payments. I've always had a love and passion for technology and looking at numbers. So once we got to, payments, I did that at a couple of different banks over, 14, 15 years. And most recent stop at Truist before this past year, I decided to get out of it because it was just not something I wanted to do anymore, but always still have a passion for it, and switch to accounting. People ask me all the time, why'd you do that? Why'd you go to accounting? for those that don't know, I'm son of an accountant and have been, gosh, since I've been here. So, it's always been there, and really, it really opened my eyes as to, when you're providing payment services, payment products to a client, yeah, you're selling essentially. They try not to use that word, but that's what you're doing. You're selling. But what does it mean for them outside of saving money and providing a platform? What happens on the back end? And that accounting piece has really opened my eyes to the reconciliation part of how the data that they need to capture to make their jobs and make their reporting, make their financial statements congruent and understandable for whatever their business need is. If they need to take it back to a bank, if it needs to be audited or whatever. So definitely that 360 degree piece that you talk about, that it's definitely captured that full circle of it.
No doubt. Well, and I feel like, just to kind of take it back to that payments piece, when you're young and, somebody introduces that industry to you, or they introduce that piece of banking, it's just like being a consumer. I think about it and I'm like, okay, payments, it means being able to take a credit card at your place of business or, take a credit card online, but that's just dipping your toe in. That's just the tip of the iceberg. Can you tell everyone a little bit about the fact, what does the payments industry, or what does merchant services essentially, what does it consist of? What does it really mean when you say you're in the payments industry?
You see a lot of financial institutions adding it within their treasury and calling the industry wholesale payments. But merchant services accepting credit cards is the fastest way to get paid, believe it or not, fastest and safest. We still have a lot of companies, a lot of people that will write checks, although that's a dying industry or dying instrument. But payments, accepting that card, and you ask yourself, well, I don't know anything about it. I don't want to pay the fees. You know, it's foreign to me. Well, like I would tell clients, you know, one, do you want to get your money in a timely fashion? And then two, would you, you know, as far as the fees are concerned, would you rather collect 98, 97% of your money in a timely fashion or none of your money in a timely fashion? And you have to chase people down. So it's a decision that they have to make, but they need to understand the full picture of it. And I feel like that part right there, the full picture as a business owner, you know, they're focused on whatever they're in business for. Then they just want to collect their money. Sure. And sometimes I feel like a good enough job hasn't been done to describe what it is that they are doing, or what we'll be doing if they take payments. So yeah, taking credit card, and you got a whole gamut of products, the mobile wallets, the you know, Apple Pay and all that, Samsung wallet, and it gets very confusing and intimidating. So really, you just want to, you know the basics and arm yourself with a little bit of information so that you can, you know, do what's best for you, your business, and then consumers too, knowing the multiple facets on how you can pay someone.
No doubt. Well, and I, you know, it's interesting because when I talk to business owners and when we talk about what it means to take a credit card or how that looks versus collecting a check or collecting a payment over a 30 or 60 day period, I always think about it. And you think about if you were to set up your own collection agency, if you had to pay people in a call center or pay people to go out and knock on a door and chase in money, how much would that actually cost you? So to your point, when you're talking about being able to collect 97 cents on the dollar or 98 cents, whatever that figure is, when you actually figure it out, it's a heck of a lot cheaper than hiring a staff to go out and chase money for you as a business owner.
It is. It definitely is. It's cheaper. It's less risky. There's, you know, the risk is lower. So many things can play a part in moving parts, or from the time the service is provided or the product is sold to when the payment is collected. You really, you know, you have overhead, travel time. If you're going to the bank, if someone's picking up a check, if you're waiting on a check to be delivered in the mail, if you want to even have your money ACH'd or wired to you, then you have to have a separate account. And I know we're going a little bit to different ways, but sure, there's so many things you could do, but with each one, there'll be risk involved. So I feel like lower the risk, lower the, you know, the time, and then everything else will take care of itself. Because right, with risk comes, you know, believe it or not, the higher the risk, the more expensive in anything. Think about it with credit.
No doubt. You have to build it in. Risk,
yeah. So
one of the biggest reasons why I started this show, and one of the things that I had kind of set forth when I opened this up, was to be able to demystify the mystical as far as banking services, financial services, and just anything in business. And I feel like the payment industry is one of those things that's pretty well protected. And people, you know, people think they may understand it. They may think they know how things are priced, but they don't necessarily always understand it, or they at least don't have that full picture. And so the nice part about having you on the show is that you have a tremendous background. You have over 15 years experience in the payments industry, whether it's merchant services, the treasury side of the house, and then also now even utilizing it as an accountant. You have a 360 degree view of this. And so the nice part about you being outside of it and not selling it anymore is that you get to kind of drop the curtain. You get to be my Wizard of Oz when it comes to the payment industry here. So I'd like to kind of start this conversation. And again, the payment technologies industry, it really is like eating an elephant, and we got to do it one bite at a time. So, you know, I think it's used as a catch-all phrase. But essentially, if you're using a financial service at this point in your life or in 2023, payment technologies is touching you. It's touching you. It's touching how you do business. It's here to stay. And so the more you understand it, the more our audience understands it, the better they are. So a big part of what I wanted to talk about is kind of, you know, people have said that COVID hastened the adoption of payment technologies. In your view, did it really?
No, it didn't hasten it. It just enhanced it. It made companies think outside the box as far as how they can accept payments and deliver product or services. A lot of companies already kind of had it in place. They just needed to, you know, grow it, make it larger. One of the things that I look at is, in the best examples, is Target with their pay to pick up. Pay through the app, you clients use their red card or whatever, they get 5% discounts, and they're able to pick up, you know, singular products or shop the entire store. And within the technology of the payment process in their app, they kind of use a geofencing to know when the customer gets there, when to deliver the product to them, and when to leave. So a lot of companies that didn't have that in place were definitely left behind the eight ball when COVID happened, but majority of them kind of already had it in place. They just, there was no real need to expand it until COVID hit. And then, you know, they poured a lot of resources into it, and now it's becoming part of the everyday process for them as far as delivering their products to their customers. You see restaurants doing it now too. So it's definitely, it's here to stay. It's not going anywhere.
Right. Well, and I think that what I hear a lot from the bank side of things is people always ask, are they Amazon proof? And so, you know, when you talk about a Target or you talk about Walmart or especially these smaller retailers, a lot of this payment technology is allowing them the opportunity to compete with people like Amazon, correct?
Yeah, it is. You definitely don't want to run away from it. You want to embrace it and learn and understand, because a lot of, you know, the younger generation, they don't have a television or an 800 number or a Yellow Pages to tell them where their favorite store is, or pick up a newspaper to understand, you know, where they want to shop. They have their phone.
Right.
And they want to, oh, it's on the phone. And then right then and there, believe it or not, you have your opportunity to sell a product. If they, oh, come down to the store, they might not have time for that, nor want to do it. But right. If they can purchase it right then and there, as they see it, then it's, you know, it's there for them to purchase. So definitely want to embrace the technology.
Well, and I think that that's, you know, just what you said. It's the integration of the retail point of sale or the retail, like really it's that kind of that retail shopping experience and making it customer friendly, as well as the ease of payment, being able to pay in your favorite or preferred way without it being too overly difficult to do so. If you're, you know, like you said, scrolling through your phone, sitting in the doctor's office, or if you're sitting at a red light, God forbid, shouldn't be picking up your phone, but we all know that we do. You know, whatever it is, it's trying to make it easy for that person to be able to choose you as a retailer.
Yeah, it is the ease of it. And now you have the instances where you don't even need to enter in your card information, because if you have it set up through Apple Pay, you can just click the Apple Pay button and it processes the transaction right there for you. And then you get emailed the receipt or confirmation and or the push notification, and you go pick up your sandwich or your your power tool or whatever you purchased. So
is it safe? You know, a lot of people ask, or a lot of, you know, especially a lot of older people, or, you know, people that are outside of the know, they get a little nervous and they feel like, I'm putting my information into, you know, Apple Pay or into these apps. Is it safe? Like, or are you putting yourself at risk?
It is safe. It is safe. It's going to be safer than writing a check, having your account information out there, a lot safer than carrying cash. And, you know, losing it, or unfortunately, we, you know, we're in a time of knuckleheads where people will, you know, stalk you for that, you know, see if you have, you know, cash on you. So, yeah, it's safer. And the technology behind it, not to get into the weeds, but before the, you know, the when we just used the black mic struck on the back of the card, that was a 4-digit authorization number that stayed the same usually for a period of time. And that's how they were able to purchase, you know, card scanners off eBay, create cards, steal your card, and go on a shopping spree at Walmart or Best Buy. Now, with the EMV chip and Apple Pay, they mask that authorization code, and it's longer, you know, 8 digits sometimes, and it constantly recycles itself. So, and it's for that particular merchant, that particular store, for that particular amount. So it's definitely a safer time then, you know, people realize, you know, oh, you can hack my phone and steal, you know, and use that information. Well, not as easy it would be if you left a checkbook in your car and someone got your checks, which essentially they got your account number. So definitely, embracing technology is going to help you in understanding it. Now, people still have their hesitations, and that's okay. You can't change everyone's mind, and people are, going to be hesitant to things. But I stress to anyone that I would talk to, at the end of the day, if something happens to your card, you call the company, they shut your card off, you get another one, and the charges that were fraudulently taken on there get put back.
Yeah, I don't think people realize how much money that banks spend on, on protecting and guarding against fraud, or even just rebating you as a customer for fraud.
A ton.
Yeah,
A
I think it's
ton.
one of the largest line items in the financial industry is fraud.
Yeah. And the protection that you have, not just from your bank that your card is issued through, but through Visa. Visa's guidelines for fraud, believe it or not, unfortunately for the business owner, are geared towards protecting the consumer. A lot of business owners don't like that, but because of the times we're in, as far as the fraud, the rampant fraud, business owners have to kind of protect themselves. So,
Sure.
but is it from the consumer standpoint, you have the protection. Trust me. I can vouch 2,000%. As long as you're not trying to do anything crazy, like I think one story is someone tried to buy an airplane on a card, which turned out to be fraudulent for a kind of a drug ring that
Okay.
happened in Central Florida. We won't get into the details of that, but as long as you're not doing anything crazy like that, usually you're going to be protected 9 times out of 10.
Well, I think it's, common sense. It's like I thought you were about to talk to me about Pepsi and somebody going knocking on their door asking him for a fighter jet.
No, they man, that was a but yeah, no, it's definitely safe. It really is. And when you look at all the things that entail as far as the technology piece that go into it's a lot safer than you realize. And then even with Apple Pay, like if you have an iPhone, go look at your card number on your actual physical card, then go look at the card number that's stored within the Apple Pay settings. It's not the same.
Right.
It's
It's
completely
tokenized.
different. Yeah, it's tokenized. It's a ghost card pretty much. Just like if you had a P card for if you were a business client, if you had a business and you had a P card and you gave the card to a virtual card to someone for payment. That's all it is.
Right. Confused minds say no, or when people don't understand something, they get a little nervous about it. And the truth of the matter is to your point. Cash is cash. Whoever has it in their possession, it's theirs, essentially. Like whether you have it in your possession or someone takes it from you, nobody's questioning where cash comes from. And then a check is just that. A check has your routing and account number on them. And so they may create a digital payment essentially at this point in time, but it has all of your information right there on that paper check. And to your point, with a tokenized transaction, when you utilize a card in today's world, or if you put it onto Apple Pay, the information does not even it equals nothing that would actually allow somebody access to your account. It's a token that's created by that application, being Apple Pay or Google Pay or whichever one it is, but it allows them access to charge your account, essentially bypassing the actual card number itself. So the safety of it, I think people haven't had it explained to them well enough, but the safety is far greater than carrying anything physical in your wallet or anything physical and actually presenting it for payment. The question that comes up is, are some of these upgrades or some of these advances in technology, is it invasive? Is it actually kind of allowing these companies to poke their head into our lives?
A little bit, yes. Yes, it is. Everyone's heard the phrase SEO, search engine optimization.
Sure.
When you're going and you look on an interface of a website and you're whether if it's on the app or on a computer and you are shopping, there'll sometimes there'll be ads from other places that you Googled, and then there'll be ads for things that you've even said. And not to put fear in you, because we just tried to go over, hey, don't be scared, but
Knowledge is power. The more you understand it, I think the more you get, the less fear you're going to have about utilizing ways to pay for things.
Our devices listen to us. They do. They listen. They look for keywords, and then you'll see an ad. Another thing too, I keep going back to Target, just because it's my wife's favorite place to visit. So I'll say that. But no, when you go to Target, let's say if you looked on the app and you went to buy something and you said, you know what, I'm going to go buy it in the store. And you go buy it in the store and it's a different price. And you say, okay, then I'm going to just go to an employee and pull up the ad in the app and say, hey, look, it's cheaper. And not really. They definitely track you, you know, geofence you and understand when you're near one of their stores, they'll change and update pricing. If it's
so, cheaper. Let me get this straight. Yeah. So if you look at it at home, if you're looking at, let's say, a television at home, and then you look at it while you're sitting in the parking lot at the store, the price is going to be different.
Yep, they will update whatever the price is in the store.
Wow.
This has happened to my wife on at least 3 or 4 occasions. So point is, and you know, some people might have different experiences, but here's my point. My point is, you're just there to buy something, to use your card and buy something, and they've gathered all this data as far as where you are, how much it is. They even have algorithms for what you buy. So then you get personalized ads the next time and promotions.
Sure.
It's a complete data collection. No longer is, I'm just going to go to Best Buy and buy a television. What brand television did you buy? What size did you buy? Did you buy any accessories with it? Oh, then we need to hit him. Oh, he didn't buy a mount. Well, we need to pepper him with the mount. We need to pepper him with surround sound until he buys it, because he just bought the television. And they'll do that.
Yeah. Well, and I can see a positive and negative to it. I mean, there's certain things to where, you know, if I bought a television and if I don't know what I don't know about the accessories available, or if I don't know necessarily maybe some of the things that I would have liked to have purchased, but I just didn't think about it, then some of those can be benefits. Some of those can actually help my shopping experience be more pleasurable. It can help me as far as understanding what's available that I didn't know before. But flip side of that, if you're, you know, if you have a different type of a personality, or if you're just not in the mood for it, or, you know, or if it just feels invasive, when people start shooting me ads about something that I just bought or something I just touched at Target, it's kind of creepy sometimes.
It's creepy. And then you have companies that turn around, especially from, you know, look, big box stores have been doing this for years, so it's not anything new. But now you have smaller companies for your mom and pop retail stops that they could purchase this data and metrics for other businesses. It's very strong in the restaurant industry. They'll look at, you know, 100 restaurants within a 50-mile radius of them. What are they selling? When is their busiest times? And you could actually purchase that data.
Wow, that's crazy. So let's talk about that side of things. We've talked enough about the buyer beware portion of this, but let's talk about some for our small business customers, for those people who are, you know, looking to be able to add electronic forms of payment, looking to add technology to help them compete with larger businesses, or they're just looking to, you know, give their customers a better experience. Let's talk about some of the things that are available for them. On the merchant services side, we've talked about kind of that experience of that shopper, but for a small merchant, when you integrate a quality merchant service product, what are you getting? Like what is it actually, how is it helping your business other than being able to take electronic forms of payment, of course, but what else comes with that?
A lot of things come with it. You sometimes, if you are an e-commerce business, you can get an automatic, you know, CRM tool. That definitely helps you, you know, market back out to your customers. Another thing you're getting is the metrics piece. I won't name the companies because there's so many of them out there, but you get that information too. You can get that tacked on to your point of sale or to your shopping cart and embedded within the API that can give you back that data. What's my busiest days? What's the businesses down the street busiest days? What are they, you know, they're not going to give you exact dollar amount, but they will give you traffic numbers.
Sure.
It will also give you the power to understand, okay, you know, where my product's going, you know, as far as just from a zip code piece. So you know where you are. You've been into a store. I think it's Ace Hardware here around town. They ask for your zip code sometimes when you buy stuff. They want to know where you're coming from.
Sure.
And they embed that into their point of sale. So as a business owner, you have that ability to understand and capture all of that data and then use it to your advantage. Email is, you know, obviously email address is the biggest one, so you can market back to your customers. Another thing too is when you look at payment, if you're an e-commerce business and you're shipping all over the country or even now all over the world, they have gateways that will definitely, you know, give you access to that to be able to, you know, take cards and understand what it means to have a client that may be outside of an area that you didn't think you would have.
Right.
You know, I think that the payment platform Stripe, which I'm not recommending them or speaking bad about them, we're just using them as an example. They give clients that ability to shop internationally.
Right.
There's multiple other gateways out there, but Stripe's the most popular one because it's easy to set up and it's easy to understand. Now, like I said, I'm not recommending or speaking bad about it. I'm just letting you know that they provide an easy product because business owners, they, in their eyes, especially when they're getting started, I don't have time to look at that. I've got to get my business up. Okay, I understand what I do, whether if it sells shoes, bake cakes, whatever. And that's what I'm going to focus on right now. And so there's a lot of products and a lot of information that gateways now gather. It's not just, hey, take your credit card, have a nice day.
Right. Well, and I think that, you know, on the other side, aside from the accounts receivable, but also for a business's accounts payable, the payment networks are also helping them gain rebates, gain, you know, access to being able to be able to pay their suppliers early. Talk to me a little bit about that as far as what you're seeing, what you see on that side, as far as how does, you know, again, digital payments or the financial technology sector, how is that improving people's accounts payable?
It's improving it tremendously because you're getting reporting now. You don't have to manually pull data off of a payment platform with an Excel or CSV file and then sync it with your accounting software. That you're able to, they're able to provide API tools that can sync them together, whether if it's Sage or QuickBooks. I think QuickBooks has their own in-house payments, but now you have that ability to where your payment is accepted. The files and the invoices are transferred over to your bookkeeping platform. Then once the data is captured, then it's settled, and then you have all the invoices that are paid. So then you know, okay, if I sold 20 of brand X shirts, and you know it's a hot topic, you know, it's a hot product, then I can take, you know, then I know I can buy 20 or 30 more. And then, you know, buy double that. So then you can take that data back to that brand, that wholesaler, and hey, look how many I bought. Here's the data that's behind it. You know, we've worked out a deal to where I have to pay you in advance, but it's kind of messing up my cash flow, but I'm selling it. Can we work something else out to where I can, you know, ease up my cash flow? So much money's going out and paying you in advance. So you have that power to negotiate when everything comes in full circle and you have the proof that you need to show that, hey, let's negotiate some things. Not saying that you have to do that all the time, but you just have that ability. It puts more power back into your pockets as a business owner.
No doubt. Information is power. The more information that you have at your fingertips in a usable format, which to your point, when you're a business owner and you're really good at whatever it is that you do, you didn't get in business because you wanted to be an accountant or because you wanted to take those numbers and create spreadsheets out of them. But that information that those spreadsheets provide is what allows you to operate more efficiently and more effectively. And most small business owners do not have a staff accountant or they do not have people on their payroll that are doing this for them. So it gives them information that they wouldn't have otherwise. Big businesses might, but they're not going to, as a small merchant or as a small business owner, they're not going to have those things unless they're being provided in an efficient and effective way that is that's cost effective for them. And to me, what I hear you saying is essentially some of these financial technologies, it's less about even how the payment's being taken, and it's more about what data and what information in a usable format you're getting as a small business owner, to where they can be actionable items, to where you can actually drive your business in a positive direction. And maybe eliminate some of the things that are wasteful or that are not driving profitability for you.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. Where should you focus more time? What's growing? What's working? What's not working? Where are your customers coming from?
Sure. Like
the biggest thing is where your customers coming from is huge to me. And what I mean by that is, let's say if you are providing a product, and I use shoes because I'm a shoe fanatic, and there's so many resellers right now that sell, resell Nikes and so forth. But where are you buying that data? Where are you buying that from? Where are they coming from? So then you take that, and there are ways now you can sync that with social media, and you can target a demographic, an area within social media to try to bring in new business. Like, that's right. How you're thinking, I just took a credit card from a guy that lives in, Central Florida. What is that? So what? No. How did he find out about that? And so that's what the whole point is. It's capturing that data and understanding, okay, how did they find out? It's one, yeah, one off. But if it's like 10, okay, something's up there. I need to look at that.
Yeah. I sat in a room one time with the CEO of Wells Fargo. With everything that company had in 2015, they looked at it and they said that the biggest commodity that they had, the most valuable thing that they had, was their customer data. And over the last 8 years, I think that that's proven to be true for all of these companies, whether small or large. The thing that has been monetized and the thing that has been the efficiencies in running businesses, what has allowed it to become more efficient, and what's allowed them to become better at what they do, is by utilizing that data and understanding how it works with the way that they run their businesses.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cash may be king, but data might be queen, because you really understand what you can do to help yourself and improve your business. Another thing too is when you're looking at these gateways, as far in point of sale systems, they're really starting to become open-ended. And not to get in the weeds on that, what that means, it's basically customized. You can customize it.
Okay.
Some are signing partnerships, like for instance, in the restaurant space, Toast, they do everything. Point of sale, payment capture, CRM. It's all embedded. They even have an app. It's all embedded.
Right.
So
to get away from them too.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes them sticky. One-stop shop. Okay. So you think, oh, that's all I need. But then let's say, hey, I don't really want that. I see you're overcharging me for processing. I want to go somewhere else. So now you've got, on the other side, you've got a lot of, gateways, processors, point of sale systems that they're open-ended, so you can customize and use that to your advantage as far as downloading data and using that to attract new customers and new business.
That's really cool. I mean, I feel like we could talk about this all day, because there's just so much. It's like reading the Bible, essentially. There's so much to it. It warrants another discussion. But before we wrap up today, I wanted to kind of, for our audience, you actually host a podcast with two other friends of yours called Down by the Bank here in Jacksonville, Florida. Tell us a little bit about your show.
Yeah, no. So a friend of mine, Corey, he came to me one day and said, hey, what do you think about, we both love football. What do you think about doing a podcast for the Jaguars? And at first I was against it. I don't have time. No, I don't want to do it. And, we were both bankers at the time. Corey still is a banker. I'm not. So I thought about it and came back to him and said, yeah, let's do it. And so, okay, let's think of a name. And so we came up with the name Down by the Bank. So we recorded two or three episodes. About a month later, I get married and I go on my honeymoon and we have to do a show. Now, mind you, this is 2016. The Jaguars were terrible. So nobody was listening to us except for a few people. And so then my friend John, he comes into the picture and I said, hey, John, I'm going to be out of town. Do you mind recording an episode with Corey? Sure. John records an episode. Corey texts me when I get back. Hey, that was great. He's awesome. He's got a lot of passion. So then we're like, we offer, hey, John, you want a third of this? You want in? Sure. So that's 2016. 7 seasons later and 200 episodes later, you know, we've affiliated with the Blue Wire Network and we have an audience in the thousands that listen to us and enjoy our weekly uploads of the Jacksonville Jaguars. And we just are passionate fans. We have no affiliation. We've interviewed several people, but the team had a really good year. And so, like I said, 200 episodes later, it's just something that we love doing.
That's really cool. And you actually had something good to talk about this year.
Oh man. Yeah. Yeah. And we sometimes, you know, we would get early on, why are you doing a podcast on them? They're terrible. For times like this, because now they're good and they're going to be good for a number of years. So
very cool. So if people want to find you in the podcast, where can they find you guys?
Social media on Twitter, @DownByTheBank.
Okay.
That's where our, you know, our primary kind of, you know, communication is with our listeners. We're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Stitcher. And I think you can also find us within the Blue Wire app, the Blue Wire Podcast Network. We can also be found there.
Very cool. Derek, I want to thank you very much for joining me today. Like I said, I think that this was it's a daunting task to go through everything that is truly in payment technologies, but I think we took a bite out of it today. And I'd love to have you on again sometime in the future to talk more about it.
Sure. Absolutely, man. Anytime. Thanks for having me.
I feel like this is a tree of a topic with incredibly deep roots. As businesses reconsider their operating models and we see an increased customer acceptance of different forms of payment, technological innovation will continue to move center stage in the financial sector. We will have future episodes to dive deeper into topics such as digital identity, new technology that's on the horizon, digital currency and money movement, in anything that I feel like our audience should know about that will benefit each one of you. I want to thank Derek Smith for joining me this week. Please check out him and his friends' podcast, Down by the Bank, if you're a Jacksonville Jaguars fan. It's a can't miss. That's going to do it for us today. We'll catch you guys next time.